Hey everybody, welcome to episode 5 of The Morning Show. I'm your host, Trey Morning, and today we will be sitting down with my friend and teammate, Gabe Vincent. I got to meet Gabe halfway through the season when he joined the Skyforce from Stockton, and I got nothing but great things to say about this guy. He is a great basketball player and even better person. So without further ado, Gabe Vincent.
Let's begin now.
Hello.
Mr. Vincent, how are you?
Mr. Morning, I'm doing well.
Are you enjoying the weather at all? I know you got to be cooped up
and all that, but the weather's a little bit better here in Miami than in South Dakota, so I've been trying to soak it in while I can.
It's definitely not the Sioux. It's definitely not the Sioux, but now let's get started. So what is your first sports memory?
My first sports memory? That's tough, man. It's probably, I feel like it's similar to many. The YMCA days, that's my first memories playing. My first sports overall is watching my brothers play soccer when I was real little. I kind of grew up on a soccer field, so I was probably around 2 or 3, just watching them play in their little Saturday morning games. That's probably my first overall sports memory.
And that's back in SAC?
That was back in, this is in Modesto, California at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So back in California.
What made you pick basketball over soccer?
It was tough. When I was playing soccer pretty competitively growing up, doing the whole AU circuit with soccer type deal. And then when I was about 11, 12 years old, I just decided I was done with soccer. And then I picked up a basketball and started working out, doing the drills just for something to do at first. And then I fell in love with it. And then I kind of made that decision around sixth grade to just pursue basketball. And it's taken me numerous places all over the world. And, I never looked back.
Yeah, out of those places, which is the favorite?
Favorite is tough. There's been a few places I wanted to travel around the world that I haven't been to yet that I was hoping basketball would take me to so far, but they haven't come to be. But this past summer, I was able to go back home to Nigeria.
Nice.
And I think just the fact that that basketball is what brought me back there after not being there for, it's been 20 years since the last time I've been back before this summer. So it's pretty amazing that basketball is the thing to bring me back home to Nigeria.
Yeah, so you play for the national team, correct?
Yeah, I did. We just qualified for the Olympics. That just got moved to next summer, actually.
What do you think about all that?
I think it was necessary. Once the NBA got shut down, I figured that it was coming soon, that they're going to have to postpone the Olympics. So even if everything cleared up around the world, by July, I think it would just be best to, kind of let everyone kind of recuperate and get things going again before the Olympics. You want everyone to be at their top physical shape, to be working out, to be at their best to perform, represent their country with the best they got.
Yeah. How has your mindset changed as an athlete going into a big competition like that? And of course you're looking forward to it, but now it's postponed a year and it's not like it's postponed, a month or two where you could still, rely on the same training and have the same mindset going into it, but a whole year removed from when you were planning on playing.
Right. It's different for sure. I mean, you think of times when, you have a big game circle on your calendar and it's coming, it's a week from now. And that kind of excitement you have building up throughout the week, building up in practice, building up, workouts as you're watching the film. But to postpone a whole year, that kind of just makes the excitement just intensify. Everyone's going to get more time to prepare, more time to get healthy. It's the excitement, if anything, has just grown and just become more eager to get out there and to represent my country once again.
Do you know if the rosters stay the same? Because I feel like, say you have a player who's on his last leg, like a 36-year-old vet who's doing his last international competition. How does he approach that? Because he's 1 year older a year from now, and you know the wear and tear on your body at 36 is different than it is at 23.
For sure. I think that, I mean, it applies deeper than that. I think it across all sports, people that are further along in their career or are on a contract year, you know, like this postponement, it's affecting everyone one way or another. But I think it's definitely affecting those people in the sports world more. You know, this could have been their last year go around, their last year, their body could do it. And they, you know, they just simply could father time. They're just not going to be the same person they were, or they will be a year from now. So, I think for them, they're more eager than anything. You know, they're hoping their body can hold up and they can compete, you know, at a high level, you know, adding a whole nother year wear and tear to their body. But, I'm sure for some, it's really stressful. For me, being a younger guy, you know, I still have a whole lot of excitement around it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you mentioned earlier that, you know, basketball has taken you to some pretty crazy places. And we spoke earlier, probably about a month ago now, but you said that you were in Wuhan over the summer training with the national team. So it's crazy how, you know, that's where the disease started, the coronavirus. And then you were there before all this popped off. So.
For sure. You know, the past 2 summers I've been in China, actually, both with the national team. But yeah, this past summer I was in Wuhan, was there for quite some time, too. I was in China overall for like 3 weeks, was in Wuhan, Guangzhou, and a couple other cities. So to hear that that's kind of where the whole virus started and kind of took off was crazy to hear for me, having just been there.
Yeah.
But you know, people, it's just a very different way of life out there. You know, they eat different things. They have a different day to day. So people are trying to point the finger at them for starting it all. But, you know, I think something like this could have happened at any point in time. And that's just the one place we can point it out, at the moment, you know, but it could have originated somewhere else. Either.
Yeah. Were you surprised when you're out there how big basketball is? Like my dad's been over there a couple of times in the past few years, and he's just surprised every single time with the perception that that he gets and other professional athletes get, especially NBA players get over in China.
Yeah.
You know, they're treated like gods in some senses. So yeah, for sure. Describe your experience a little bit.
For me, both times I've been in China, it was, you can kind of tell they haven't seen much. They don't really know the difference between myself or Kyrie Irving. You know, as far as they're concerned, like if you're in the NBA, you're in the NBA, and they, you know, they give all that praise because they love basketball. Even when you walk by an outdoor court, they're all playing hard. And it's not a very diverse country, I think. So when they saw a lot of tall African American men, they just assume what you do. And I think it's just for lack of not knowing. And, but they assume that we were basketball players, and they assume that, you know, they want to take pictures. They want to be involved. Like at the game, we played China to qualify for the Olympics. And that was the craziest game I've been to. I mean, a sold out crowd. I mean, the crowd's cheering for every great play that happens, whether it's for China or a play we made. You know, they were just so into the game and so locked in. That it was just an amazing environment to be playing in.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that, you know, basketball took you back to Nigeria, which you hadn't been in 20 years, which is home to you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where is one place that you wish basketball could take you? Where do you want sports to take you?
Right. I mean, so far it's been following the trend of taking me everywhere. I mean, I've always wanted to visit Europe. I've always wanted to be, I've always wanted to go to the Italy, Spain, Greece, and kind of just hit that whole area within Europe. And I had some opportunities to play over there professionally that I turned down because, you know, I'd like to play professionally in the States. But hopefully that whether it's for a camp or just for off-season travel, that, you know, while I'm still an athlete, I'll be able to visit those places. But Europe in general is somewhere I really want to get to. Italy specifically, Spain as well. You know, I have some buddies that are playing professionally over there in some top leagues that are doing very well. So it's just amazing how basketball is so global now.
Yeah.
You know, you can make money anywhere playing this game.
No, for real. For real. And a lot of people are hurting right now because there is no basketball, not just sports.
Oh, for sure, basketball, man.
So it's a big void that a lot of people are dealing with right now. In your expert opinion, how do you think we get basketball back?
You know, I think it's tough. I think it's something that they gotta take a lot into account. Like you said, it affects a lot of people globally, even basketball. You got a lot of people that work in the arenas, that work in sales, that work in the front office. So it's more than just the athletes. You have the consumers who are suffering. But I think it's just something that's going to take time, man. It's going to take time. I know they had talks of moving everything to one location. That way we could still air games. But it's just not quite the same without the fans involved. It's not quite the same without them in the arena. So we're really going to see what Adam Silver has in mind and what the league comes up with. But as of right now, with everything on quarantine and cases popping up more and more within the state, it's hard to see that end of the road at this moment. But I'm sure it's coming soon. I'm sure they have plans in place. And they're just waiting to see how the next couple weeks go.
Yeah, no, for sure. This time sees a lot of people, especially not just professional athletes, but a lot of people out of work, and a lot of people who relied on something for so long being taken away from them. And unfairly so,
mm-hmm.
You know, situations that they can't control. So in your case, you know, I understand that the season's supposed to start back in a few months, but if basketball wasn't on the table for you, what profession do you think you'd like to do? Would you like to attempt?
It's tough. I've been focused on basketball for so long. I've been focused on it for so long that it's always been my goal to get to this point. But after basketball, you know, I've always wanted to own a business, own something that I can be very hands-on with that, you know, it's probably a nonprofit and has a way of giving back within the business itself. I'm not sure exactly in what capacity I'd get involved in, but that's probably something I'd want to be doing or be pursuing. I'm pretty passionate about giving back to those in need, just being a helpful hand wherever I can. My dad runs a foster family agency, so I don't know if I'd do something quite exactly like that, but I'd do something involved to where I could, you know, put my imprint on a community.
I did not know that. My dad, I don't know if you knew this, but my dad grew up in foster care.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, my dad grew up in foster care, I think 11 to 12 through 18 when he left for college, so... No, I completely get that, and you know, much respect to your dad for doing that, because you know, a lot of kids need guidance in their life. They don't come from the best households, and they need some stability in their lives growing up, you know, to help them. So shout out to your dad for doing that. On the opposite note, what profession would you not like to do? Like, is there one that just stands out? They're like, nah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I've never really seen myself as a coaching basketball, but, you know, I've heard crazier things happen and people end up getting into it in a multitude of ways. But I can't think of one thing I would not want to do. As of right now, it's pretty much everything's open to me. Both my parents are also psychologists, but I mean, I never really saw myself becoming that or being a therapist for others. So maybe that, maybe not do that officially. Maybe that'll be my answer, being a psychologist. But I've been pretty open to just about everything, really, trying to just experience life.
Yeah, you talked about dedicating everything to sports, and you know, I can relate. You know, that's the main thing for me. That's the main thing for you, and that's been life for so long. That's how we've grown up and what we know best.
Right.
What role, kind of already know this answer, but I want to hear from you. What role does sports play in your life? Do you see it more as a job? Is it your craft? What's your whole relationship with sports?
For me, I describe it as my passion. You know, basketball is my passion. So yeah, it's my job, but I definitely, I'm very serious about it. I think I'm serious about it more so than most my age or most people I was around growing up. But I think that's part of the reason why I got to this stage in my career. But I take it very serious. I take it as my job. I take it as my craft. It is something I'm just really passionate about. Even, you know, the places, like we mentioned, the places it's taken me, a lot of the great people I've met through the game or through just being affiliated with the game have just been lifelong relationships. Even this relationship, even the way how it just happened where I met you and I came on this team in the middle of the year. And now we've gotten along well, and now I'm across the country in Miami. It's just a... It's amazing where the game has taken me and the people and the doors it's opened up, you know.
Yeah.
So.
No, for sure. Basketball is definitely a family, and that's something that I've learned more as I become professional this past year. You know, even I started my professional career in Moscow, and Quinny, who is a coach on the Heat, he used to play in Moscow. So he was one of the people to reach out to me after Summer League, after finding out that I was playing there, and he had a bunch of advice for me and great things to say. So, I mean,
yeah,
basketball is all over, and it's definitely a family. Like EG, you know, EG hit me up too because he coached in Ukraine, I think, which is right by Russia. So, I mean, basketball's all over the world, and, you know, we got family everywhere because of this game, which is awesome, So what's one thing you wish you knew before starting this basketball journey? Is there one piece of advice that you would tell Gabe 2 years ago or Gabe even 5 years ago when he was in college, just going through this whole entire process? What's one thing you wish you knew then that you know now?
Yeah, I think I would just say to work smarter, not harder. I think a lot of people have a misconception that you need to spend X amount of hours in the gym or X amount of hours of film to reach this point. I think for everyone, their path is different. And that's also something I've realized more as I've been around the game and now in my second year professionally. some guys are one and done. Some guys go to the G League and then find their route. Some guys play overseas and come back. You know, everyone has a different path that to achieve what they're going to achieve in their lifetime. But if you're just working crazy hard without the proper intent, without being smart about what you're dedicating your time to and the way you're dedicating your time, I think it'll just be almost a wasted effort at times. I think you get to be very specific about the work you are doing, the way in which you're doing it. That way you can keep your body at its best form, keep your mind sharp. That way you don't get sick of the little details that are extremely important the further you get along in the game. So I think I would just tell them to work smarter, not harder. That's something I figured out each year of my career or each year since I've been playing the game, that there's smarter ways to do an exercise to be more efficient without putting too much wear and tear on your body.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough balance that a lot of people don't know about. I mean, you have the mental aspect, you have the physical aspect, and my belief, you have the spiritual aspect. And that's, you know, keeping everything zen, keeping everything balanced and staying even keeled throughout the ups and the downs. Because, you know, professionally, you have an 82-game season. In the G League, it's only 50, plus the playoffs. But there's a lot of traveling involved. There's a lot of ups and downs. This team is switching all the time, especially in the G League. So you never know when your moment's going to come. So you just got to stay ready. And that's one of the toughest things in sports, just staying ready. Like it sounds simple from an outsider.
Right.
But to an outsider, but I'm telling you, that's the hardest thing I've ever done in sports is just stay ready and not knowing and being able to perform when your number's called. So
It's tough. I mean, that's the reality of the business we're in too, though, right? Like, there's so much uncertainty. Like with a phone call, my whole life changed. I had to move to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Another phone call, I was in Miami, you know, 12 hours later. So, and that's kind of just the nature of the business. You know, at one point you were in Moscow and then boom, you're back in the States. There's just so much uncertainty with our business that staying ready portion is very difficult. It's hard to keep your mind engaged.
For sure. For sure. I mean, you're on a two-way with the Heat and you're essentially playing for two different teams. Even though we run the same system in Sioux Falls and everything is based around what y'all do down here in Miami, it's two different teams. It's two different structures. It's two different groups and two different groups of people you have to be around, you know?
A bunch of different personalities. Yeah, two different, whole different personalities. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's definitely tough, and people see it from the outside and they're like, oh, you're making all this money and, you know, it's such a glamorous lifestyle, but I would argue they don't even see the half of it. They don't even see the half of it. They see like 20% or just the stuff that we could see, because this is truly a grind and it's a struggle.
Well, they don't really get the details of it either. No. And a lot of people in the business don't really, like, most people don't really know the difference between a two way and an NBA player. You know, they just know, you know, you're in the league. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot of different misconceptions I think the public has, whether it's friends back home or just a random person on social media, you know.
That's what you were talking about in China, like when you went over there and just saw people, they didn't know.
Yeah.
They just knew you played. They just knew you hooped. They saw you were black and tall and had an athletic build, and they're like, oh, they put two and two together, like, oh, he hooped, you know, so...
Right,
it's tough, and that's not only in China. That's here in the States. It's here in Miami, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they see you walking around with your Heat gear, and you know, I'm wearing a Heat shirt right now, and that's most of the stuff in my closet. In all honesty, most of the stuff I wear on a daily basis, like the athletic stuff, and I'm pretty sure you're the same exact way. You know, you just throw on a Heat shirt and shorts, and we got a bunch of gear. So that's the main wardrobe. So people see that and see you're tall and out in the city, like, oh, he played for the Heat, but they don't get that, hey, I may be here for this amount of time, but I'll also be in Sioux Falls and whatnot. And,
right.
You know,
and I think the most underrated part about professional sports in general is the travel. Like, people didn't really understand when I was in Sioux Falls for a game, and I find out after the game around 10 o'clock that I'm leaving at 6 a.m. the next morning. So it's like I'm packing my bag and I'm on the road.
Yeah.
And then I end up being on the road for like 20 days. You know, they don't understand how much you're back and forth and how you have to get to a different city and hop to a different team, and now you're playing with them. And it's like, you know, you're pretty much living in hotels and out of suitcases for much of your time as a pro, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. My dad wrote a book in, I want to say, 2010, 2009, right when he got done playing. It's called Resilience, and I'm actually reading it for the first time. And he has one thing that I just read today that he put in the book. He said basketball is a nomadic existence. Being a basketball player is a very nomadic existence, because you don't really have a home base, and you could feel comfortable in a situation like he did in Miami for 8 years, and then they draft Dwayne Wade and they're trying to go in a different direction. So, and he also has his health issues at the time, so he's like, you know what, I've got to make the best decision for me and go to New Jersey. And that's where he ended up, and then came back to the Heat, obviously. But you know, you never know. Like, you could feel comfortable in a situation. Like, nobody's safe. I love saying this. Nobody's safe in this business.
No one in the NBA is safe. Not one person.
No. Like, it's very far-fetched that it's going to happen. But let's say, this is pretty ridiculous, but, like, put Michael Jordan in a time machine and he goes back to 25 years old and a lot of people are out of work, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people are out of work. So, I mean, you never really know what's going to happen. And nobody's safe, because somebody, like, a crisis like this could happen. And people need to make money. You know, you talked about the people in the arenas who are no longer in work and they don't have a job. You also have the owners who they can take a hit during this time at the same time, mm-hmm. they're worried about the bottom line. So if they have contracts coming up, they're thinking like, hey, what's the best way to go about this from a financial standpoint? Like, what's the best way to deal with this player going right. forward? Because you don't know when we're going to have basketball again. And they don't know when they're going to be able to make money off the TV rights and when they're going to be able to make money off the sales in the arena, you know, by having people there.
So, hey, man, it's even deeper than that. I mean, for players, like I said, like, I know myself included, you know, I'm fresh into the game. You know, I haven't been playing that long. And, you know, I need to make money. I don't really got a lot of money coming my way. So my contract is up June 30th, as well as many other guys in the league. So it's like, how does that affect us and what we're going to do? You know, for me, I was really looking forward to summer league, and it's looking like that might not be a thing anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, how can I market myself to, you know, not just the Heat, but to other teams around the world to put myself in a position to be employed come, you know, next fall or next season? So many people are taking a hit right now, families included.
Exactly. No, because a lot of people rely on this game to live, man. Like, there's a lot of families involved. And you can look at it from both sides, from a coach's perspective or an owner's perspective. Our coach in college used to say this. I think Patrick used to say this. It was either Patrick or JT3, but he would say that, like, people's lives are on the lines. Like, if we lose games in college, the players are safe. 9 times out of 10, the players are safe. Like, they might see less playing time and all that stuff, but, like, think about if you have a losing season at a big organization like UNC just had a losing season. You know, we've been having losing seasons too at Georgetown, but point to a UNC who was supposed to have a great year, and then they just took a nosedive. And the coaches, the players aren't making money, but the coaches are getting paid to do this. And their job is to win games and instruct these young men to become the best basketball players they could be, develop them. But at the end of the day, like, they don't get paid off of having players go to the NBA.
Right.
They don't get paid to send you to the NBA.
Games in college.
Exactly. They get paid to win the games in college. And if they're not winning the games in college, they get fired. And when they get fired, their families suffer as a result. So, you know, you're able to look at this when you're older and have some respect and be like, all right, cool, coach was right in saying all this. And, you know, we should, you know, band together and actually get wins and care about this. But when you're 19, 20 years old, that's a tough thing to wrap your head around. Because you're not paying bills, bro.
Yeah, well, there's just so much. You don't know what you don't know, you know?
Exactly.
In many ways.
Exactly, no, for sure. To stay on the topic of sports, if you could change any rule in any sport, what would it be?
That's tough. I think for me, the one free throw rule that they tried to implement in the G League, I didn't really like that very much.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's just, I mean, I get it. The game's evolving, the game's changing, but that's just, you know, it just seems like it's just taking it too far. It's just too much like open gym.
Yeah.
On the flip side, though, it was huge for me because I was making my free throw. So, you know, it worked out well in my favor, but in terms of the game I fell in love with, that doesn't really fall in line with that.
And you stay getting fouled on the three-point line. I don't know how you kick out your leg or something. You come off that curl, catch and shoot, and you know you get that foul.
They're chasing too hard.
Exactly. You got at least one. I say your average per game was like 1.2 for the time you were in Sioux Falls. It's like 1.2 fouled on the 3-point line a game.
I try to find ways how to get creative.
Yeah.
Once I threw that big old brace on, I had to get creative to get my buckets.
Yeah, you made it work, though. Yeah, so you say...
We were about to go win that championship, too, man.
Someone
put on Instagram, they said, if you weren't, Crota didn't happen, what would you be doing right now? I say, winning a championship with my dog.
For real, because the regular season would have ended 2 days ago, and we'd be in the playoffs right now. And we were hitting our groove, bro. We were hitting our guy. I mean, of course, we lost Mike.
And everyone was just getting more and more healthy, too.
Yeah, no, for real. For real. Shout out to Mike, you know, playing for Golden State. You know, that's huge, man. I'm looking at the camera right now. Like, we're all happy for you, bro. So keep doing your thing and, you know, best of luck going forward, for real.
For sure.
But nah, man, that's it for me. I just wanted to ask that last question about, you know, about changing the rule, but you kept it simple. You kept it to the free throw. I thought you were going to go into some philosophical type shit, but.
I mean, also, I hope they don't ever make a four point shot. I don't know if you've heard about those talks.
Yeah.
I know they got it in the big three, but I do not want to see that in the league at all, man.
That's wild. I was playing 2K the other day, and it was like one of my first times playing 2K, and they were talking about this idea of having the top 16 teams in the league make the playoffs rather than the 8 in the East and 8 in the West, which is a pretty interesting idea. But at the same time, it does screw over. Right now, it screws over the Eastern Conference. It screws over
like
4 teams in the Eastern Conference because the majority of teams are going to be out West.
I don't like that just because, I mean, guys have been ganging up together and going out of their way to play with certain people for some time now. Like, it's not a new concept. But, I mean, I've always liked it being separated East and West. You know, I think if you just make it top 15 or top 16, then I think the league entirely just becomes a little less competitive. I think when you have now it's the Western Conference, it's more competitive. And in the past, it was the Eastern. So it's like you have guys competing just to get into the playoffs to compete like they are in the West. Like, you got guys like Dame Lillard that's trying to will his team to make the playoffs. And we're seeing him do some amazing things. Like, I think that competition just brings out the best in some competitors, you know?
So you think that guys would coast in a way? Like Dame, I mean, Dame's a dog. Like, he'd be working regardless.
Dame's a dog.
I remember you telling me, like, when you're on a road trip with the Heat and, like, playing against him, and you said, who do you say was the toughest, PG?
PG was tough, bro. For me, like, watching those two play live and up close, because I didn't get in the Portland game. I didn't play that game. But watching the way Dame was working, everything just looked so purposeful. And that kind of goes back to what I said before, like, work smarter, not harder. It's like every move he made on the court with and without the ball had purpose behind it. There was no wasted movements. And the first person I saw ever do that was Braun. Because they had come to Santa Barbara when I was there for training camp and they were practicing. And I'm even watching them in a light practice. Like, he's not wasting one movement. He's not doing one horse around shot. Like, everything, when he was locked in for that hour 15 or whatever it was, like, he was locked in. And that's kind of how Dame was in the game, though. So yeah, every pick and roll he was in, every jumper he took, the way he attacked the rim, it was just so purposeful. But then PG, you know, being 7 foot, and that was the game I played. So being on the court, some of the moves he was doing was just like you shouldn't be able to do that at your height.
You
shouldn't do that.
He's not 7 foot, bro.
He's a good 6'10", bro. He's a good 6'10".
He let his hair grow out, so he's like a cool 6'10". But
with a jumper, though.
With a
handle.
Like, bro, his Hezzy game is crazy, bro.
It's crazy. It got to that point where it was like, you know, they started making shots, and the majority of it was a good little run by him. It was just tough twos. You know, like, guys are playing good defense. He just, boom, step back, tough two.
And
like,
then now,
some of these things are just hard to guard.
You know? In today's league, they'll tell you that tough twos are what you want. Like, you look at the Rockets. The Rockets shoot. I had my workout for the Rockets. I think I told you this. I had my workout for the Rockets over the summer during pre-draft. And they had, like, three things on the board. They had three things on offense and three things on defense. And the three defensive things were like, oh, we switch everything. We deny and we don't foul. It was like, those are three things. I don't know if that's correct, but I think those are the three things. And the three things on offense were we shoot layups, we shoot threes, and we shoot free throws. Those three things.
Yeah.
And if you're not shooting those three things, like, you can't hoop with us. And, you know, that's what they would give up on defense. Like, I guarantee if the Clippers played the Rockets now, I got to look at, like, I'm going to look at the score of the last Clippers-Rockets game. But I'm sure that PG was having a field day because they were just letting him have all the twos he wants.
Well, it's a forgotten shot that gets lost in the stats. I think that's just because a lot of guys that shot it beforehand or just like, that's a shot I can get to, but that's not a shot that they work on and or make.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you get to crunch time in games, like you look at Kawhi in the finals the past year, every shot he took in the last 4 minutes damn near was all the pull up too.
Yeah, it's about getting a bucket. At that time, you're like,
it's about getting a bucket. Right. And a lot of times the shot that's there is that 10 to 15 footer pull up, or even 10 to 18 feet pull up. And I think when you just take it out of the game, like a lot of the league is doing based on the numbers, I think based on the numbers overall, it makes sense. But there's a lot of guys that have that in their game, and it is a good shot for them.
Yeah.
You know, you see guys like CJ or Dame shooting, or PG, Kawhi, Bron has his fadeaway. You got DeMar, who shoots a lot of them. CP3, who shoots a high percentage of them. So it's like, you got some guys who are just super efficient. Melo.
I'm thinking of Jack, too. We just play with him.
Yeah, Jay Jack.
Like, Jared Jack's mid-range game is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
you know what shot he's going to every time.
It was Jack. It was Jack, myself, and someone else in the mid-range. Our team was above 50%.
Yeah.
It's like you and people trying to take that out of their game. Like, some people shoot the mid range better than they shoot layups.
Exactly.
Contest or no contest. So it's like, there's gonna be more hands and more traffic around the rim, you know. So sometimes it's a better look.
For sure. You look at a big like Jokic, like he's not getting up on the rim. I think he had like, you know, 10, 15 dunks last year. But
right.
He was getting buckets, he's facilitating, he's hooping, getting boards, but he's playing below the rim. And I'm looking back at a dude like Zeebo. Right. Zeebo was the same exact way. You know, he lived in a mid-range. You know, catch and face, jab, that slow shot fake.
Even Chris Bosh for a little bit.
Exactly,
a little pick and
bro.
Pop right to the top of the key.
Exactly.
Like, step in from the top of the key. Like, it's a good shot. I think it's a lot of people stop working on it and just shot it because, you know, they saw others do it. And it was that's not the right look for the team, you know.
Did I show you that ESPN shot chart? The one with the threes?
I think you did.
Yeah, I got to find that on Instagram, but it was...
It was like, there was like everything around the arc and everything in the paint. There's nothing outside, like in between.
It's like how it's changed the past 10 years. Like, it showed in 2010, the average shots, and there was like a bunch of mid-range ones. It showed the 90s. I think it was like 1990, 2000, 2010, and then now. And just seeing those...
Right.
There's four errors.
It's also a change in the rules, too, though.
Yeah. Nah, for real.
You know, you could have your hands on back then, so it's like you can't always get all the way to the rim. You got to pull up.
Yeah. That's crazy.
And now
watching.
They cost a lot more, so.
Yeah. It's crazy watching film on Jordan, and that's all he did, bro. And he's the best, player of all time. And he shot mid-range jumpers. He got to the rim and did everything. MJ did everything. I'm not going to disrespect MJ at all. He did everything.
Mm-hmm.
He killed in the mid-range, though. Like, Kobe modeled his mid-range game and his game after Jordan.
Right. And that's the shot. And that's what I was trying to tell you about Kawhi earlier, was like, that's the shot that's there come crunch time. You know, you're getting to the rim. Okay, now they're so worried about you getting to the rim, you knock down some threes. Now you're getting to the free throw line. And now you get to the last 4 minutes. People are helping over. They're up on you, so you can't get that three, and they're waiting to help at the rim. So you have that pull up.
Yeah.
That mid range shot was there come crunch time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the saying? It's not a bad shot if it goes in.
Ah.
What do you think?
I mean, I was told that at a young age, so. I think they're still bad shots. Like, I think heat checks are some of the worst shots in basketball. Typically they don't go in, and they're typically a shot that person doesn't really work on. Otherwise, it wouldn't be called a heat check, right?
Yeah.
So to me, those are some of the worst shots in basketball. But when it goes in, you know, there's nothing to be upset about. Now that guy, you know, now he's really feeling it, and the hoop's super big. So it's like. It's tough to say. I'm a fan of good basketball, so if it's just straight ISO every possession and shooting tough ones and they're going in, I don't know if I'm calling that a good shot or I'm praising it because it went in. Like, I'm a fan of moving the ball around and just getting some good high IQ basketball, and then making plays off of that. So,
sure.
I think it goes hand in hand, though.
What's the biggest difference you've seen in the G and in the NBA?
The difference between the G and the NBA, I think it's similar to most times when we move up a level. Because each level up till now has always been, guys are just simply just bigger, faster, stronger. But I think a lot of times you see guys in the G League do what they did in the G League in the NBA in terms of athleticism, or you see even more athletic plays in the G League or bigger guys. So I don't know if that's exactly – I think it's just the IQ. Some of these guys, the way they think the game is amazing. It's like second to none, some of the guys' IQ. And then you got some guys who are, you see some people in the G League, you're like, there's no way there's someone more athletic. And there is, and they're probably in the NBA. Some of the things these guys, like Derrick Jones Jr. is a great example. Like some of the things he does in the air with the basketball, even when he's not dunking, just finishing tough layups, it's like the way he can control his body, the way he can defend and cover ground, it's amazing. It's stuff that you never seen before. And, it's not like, he's probably, 6'6", 6'7", 200 pounds. Like, he's not a super big guy, but he's extremely efficient at what he does. And you take a guy like Duncan Robinson, not the fastest, not the strongest.
Duncan's tough, bro.
Not the most athletic, but so detailed in his approach, so detailed in the way he gets himself open, the way he works on his shot, the way he does things at full speed, that it's like, he'll rattle off 10 threes, no problem. So it's and both of those guys have played in the G League.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, G League's become such a good route in preparation for the NBA, in preparation for other leagues around the world, because you're going against guys that are, some of them are equally as talented or athletically gifted. So it's interesting to see back and forth.
No, for sure. And the league is only going to get better and expand. And they're talking about establishing a CBA, collective bargaining agreement, in the next couple of years. So hopefully it's done by next year, which would be awesome. But it'll only get better from there, man. And the thing that surprised me about Dunk was, I walked in a locker room one day in Miami, and he opened the door, and dude was looking me in the eye, and I'm 6'8", 6'9", and he's a cool 6'8". And
he's
shoot
a big
the
guy.
Shit out the ball, bro.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. But like you said, both those guys spent some time in the G League and they developed there. And, you definitely see the job that Miami's doing developing players, and the track record speaks for itself. And I think that's going to continue to be the case in Sioux Falls and Miami, and like we said, the league's only.
I mean, Sioux Falls is such a great setup too.
For sure.
It's such a great setup. I mean, even it being in Sioux Falls, no disrespect to Sioux Falls, I grew to love the place, but there's just not much to do out there but basketball.
Yeah, shout out to Joe Size. Shout out to Joe Size in Sioux Falls.
Shout out, Joe Size. Shout out to Looks.
To Looks. Oh, Looks. Yes, that shrimp burger Looks goes crazy. That shrimp burger.
Everything
crazy.
Over there go crazy.
Yeah. No, they got some cool spots in Sioux Falls. Crave is another good one. Minerva's is straight.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
I didn't get to spend too much time there, unfortunately. Fortunately and unfortunately. So I didn't get to get all the good food spots in, but the ones I hit were good, man.
Yeah. We took you to the good spots. You're well traveled now, though. You're you're a vet. I look at you like a vet.
I mean, I'm a G League vet for sure. I like to say that now and then, especially since I got to know the refs down there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm a second year G League vet.
Yeah, Gay's my old head. That's my vet.
Yeah, I'm an old man. I'm an old 23-year-old man, let me tell you.
Nah, he's old. He's very old. He's an old soul. I'm an old soul as well, but that motherfucker's old. That motherfucker is old. But anyways, brother, as always, good chatter. Good chatter.
Only the best chatter from this end, baby.
The best chatter, so far. So All the best, brother, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, my man. Stay safe out here.
Peace. You too. Hey, everybody. If you like this episode, please make sure to leave a like, follow, or comment down below. I had a great time making it, and I hope you enjoyed listening to it. If you know anybody else who would enjoy the show, please make sure to pass this episode along. Stay tuned for next week's episode, and in the meantime, keep up with the show on Instagram at The Morning Show and on our blog at treymorning.net/podcast. Thank you, and take care.